Hiya, hiya, baby. Can you feel it, feel it, feel it, feel it? Do you feel the same behind it as I'm so high? We will make you feel that way. So right. Roma, let's go. Yeah. Got to get high. I've been high since the last song. And I just been smoking and smoking. Smoke another black, roll another up. You know that we can really ease your mind. Every time I smoke a reefer, that indoor high makes me fly. If everybody smoked a blunt, relieve the mind, the world could be a better place. If everybody took a break and we all just get wasted. Smoke out, smoke out, choke out.
Oh yeah. Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to Cannabis Corner on WNHHLP 103.5 FM, broadcasting live from downtown New Haven. We are streaming live on TuneIn Radio and NewHavenIndependent.org. We are also streaming live video on Facebook. Just go to your Facebook.com/NewHavenIndependent or go to your Facebook page and look us up. You can hit see first to see all the great programming we have on WNHHLP. And I want to announce that as of this week, you can also stream Cannabis Corner live on the Green Haven Radio Facebook page and the Cannabis Corner Facebook page. So that is a cool thing. So we got it streaming three new places on Facebook now. All right. So today is January the 17th, 2020. Cannabis Corner, we're here. Uncle Lou will be joining us a little late, I guess. But right now, we are going to be joined by Isaiah, our events man. How are you this week, Isaiah?
I'm good. How are you, Joe?
I am good. I am doing very well. Hold on one second.
How's Puerto Rico?
Puerto Rico's good. How was the High Bazaar?
It was good. It was a good event. The bands were really fun. The entertainment was nice. Altogether, a great weekend. It was a cold weekend, but we stayed warm inside, so we huddled up for warmth.
Now, I hear that it's freezing cold there in Connecticut, and you guys had snow and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, last night we had a little crazy weather, but it's pretty much all gone. The sun came out around here in North Haven, so we're okay.
All right. Very, very cool. Very cool. So High Bazaar was good. Good attendance, good bands, good music. Your phone keeps cutting out. Okay. Why do you keep your screensaver? So tell us what's happening this week down in Connecticut. It looks like by looking at the calendar, we got a ton of stuff going on.
Yeah, we got a good amount of
events. It's wonderful to see how great this is going for Connecticut. So go ahead. Give us some of the highlights.
There's a good amount. I'm just pulling up my events really quick just so I can be 100% with you. So there's a good amount of sessions going on this week. We have more Cousins gatherings. We have more Pioneer Valley Society events and the usual weekly events that you'll see every week. But we have some exclusive events coming up this week. Puff and Learn to Paint on Tuesday, January 18th, hosted by Silly Girl Farms.
Oh, I've heard of them.
Yeah, and Greenlit CT. So that's going to be a really cool event. So you can go there, you can learn to paint, but they're also going to be teaching people how to learn how to do home grow.
Oh,
and
okay.
So it's like also an educational event. So it's really cool. And for the ladies, on Thursday, January 20th, there's a Women in Weeds conference. If you go to eventbrite.com, you can just look at our calendar and go to eventbrite.com. And that is an exclusive event for women who are trying to merge into the cannabis industry. And it is for networking and just more of a social event. But it's really good to meet with people who are well-versed in the cannabis industry.
Very cool.
And very also cool. Another event from one of your friends, Dr. Erin Doolittle. She does your green light to recovery on Thursday, January 20th. If you just go to her her Instagram or her Facebook page, you can see, or just go off our calendar, you'll see where to figure out where that event is. But it is a recovery event, and it is more based on.
I think we posted
on,
that on our Facebook page yeah. and Instagram.
Yeah, so we did. So
you go to our Facebook page, look it yeah. up, and it's there.
So those events are really cool, and they're educational, and they're for, you know, just helping people. Really, you know, all
well,
these.
They're
other...
a little bit more than seshes, you know.
Yeah,
it's like is... now you buy your weed at the sesh.
Yeah.
Now you can go to, you know, learn other things. So it's
exactly.
a good thing.
You can learn, or if you need help, even if you just need help. I mean, Dr. Erin Doolittle is, you know,
she's
a
great.
Very yeah. It's a great outlet for more than just your high. You know, your body and your mind as well may need recovery, and she can, that event might be great for people. So, and it's I know it's in the Hartford area, but it's you could contact her or and look at her pages and see more information about that.
No,
but
I
then
see
also
our,
the High Bazaar on, you know, the weekend.
On the weekends,
we have High
right.
Bazaar and another Twin Roots event on Friday. And also Kill a Smoke Fest is going to be on Friday. So
I heard now this Kill a Smoke Fest is supposed to be a very special event.
It's getting
well,
bigger.
It's,
and they have, like,
actually, this
cocoa.
Friday, this Friday is a Growers Cup. They're actually having the growers, you know, the vendors that are the growers there. And they're
cool.
doing a competition between all the growers that vend over there, and they're doing a nice little competition.
That's awesome.
Yes, that is this Friday night. That's Kill a Smoke Fest. And you can find them. Where is there? You got to hit them up on Instagram?
Yes, you can hit them up on Instagram. If you look at our poster, all the information that you need is there. But they're also going to be posting the poster tonight. So you can see from their pages, and it's going to be on your feed if you follow them, and you'll
and
see.
And we'll post
all
that as well. We'll
yeah, we'll also, well. We'll be posting that as well. But that event, I didn't know. I actually really like that, because a lot of these events are really exclusive, and sometimes the smaller growers who are coming up, but their accommodations are maybe a little smaller, or it's good for that community. It's really awesome to hear that.
It's good. Yes, it's excellent. And we got so much going on in Connecticut, and I'm really loving it. We got a couple announcements for the show. Our guest is coming on, so we'll get to her in a second. But we got a couple of announcements from Greenhaven Radio, and they Greenhaven Media, and they are up here as well on the events calendar. We've just signed on three new shows, actually. I can make this announcement today. We have signed on To Be Blunt with PZ to simulcast with us and be a part of the Greenhaven family. We have also signed on Grant Smith Ellis to be doing a policy watch, which is about laws and about cannabis policy. So that's a very educational podcast. And he goes live on Tuesday nights from 6 to 7. PZ is on Thursday nights. And I'm very pleased to announce that coming to Greenhaven Radio is Still Token with Token with the Dead. Now, for those of you who don't know, Token with the Dead, it started out as a fun comic book. And it has just grown and grown and grown. These guys have gained a following from, you know, they go to comic book fairs, they go to horror fest. They've gained quite a cult following, and they have a great podcast. It's called Still Token. And the good thing about this podcast is, yes, about once a month, they do have a cannabis themed guest, but they also have guests from the movies, musicians, they have guests from horror films.
That's awesome.
Things like that. People that they meet at these conferences and bring them on as guests, and people that they've just met through all the different things they've done. They've done a web series. Uncle Lou was actually in it. So, you know, it's a pretty cool thing to be having them with us. And we're talking with them about doing a lot of different things with them in the future. So we're very, very excited to make that announcement today. But for right now, we got to get into our next segment, and you want to hang around for this because we're going to be talking about psychedelics. So, and you know, that's a big thing these days. We're pretty far down on the cannabis. Cannabis is got traction now. The momentum is going. And obviously, as good activists, we know that the next thing that has to happen is we got to push the envelope a little farther and start undoing another wrong that was actually done in the 60s when they made psychedelics illegal. So with us today is Ville-Marie Nardok. And Ville-Marie is a PSYD. She's a licensed clinical psychologist focusing on the integrated treatment of co-occurring mental health and substance use disorders and psychedelic-assisted therapy. She's an activist working to end the war on drugs and advocates for science and reality-based drug education, not propaganda, and harm reduction approaches for all. She approaches her work from a harm reductionist and humanistic lens, focusing on the individual needs of the person, group, or community. She received a certificate in psychedelic therapies and research from the California Institute of Integral Studies in 2018. She is the director of drug education at Students for Sensible Drug Policy and the co-founder of Sana Healing Collective in Chicago. Ville-Marie, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Joe. Thanks so much for having me. I'm doing well. How about yourselves?
I'm doing well. Thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. This is kind of new ground for us. We usually cover cannabis.
Yeah.
But we also know how the two are linked. And, it's all part of the war on drugs, right?
Exactly.
So first thing I wanted to ask you is, what is actually considered a psychedelic? So what substances and what chemicals and I don't want to even call them drugs, medicines out there, are considered a psychedelic?
Yeah, so some of the ones that are probably getting the most airtime right now would be MDMA,
right.
Psilocybin, or
right.
LSD, and then we have the ayahuasca brew, we have ibogaine, we have DMT, and all things in between and beyond that are combinations of all sorts of other things. And then, we have some interesting other drugs that are also, of course, being considered for medical or therapeutic use. Cannabis, of course, which can sometimes fall into a psychedelic space depending on
yes.
the person and the conditions, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Ketamine, of course.
Ketamine, right.
Yeah, so there's there's so much potential on this planet that we haven't adequately tapped into. And so I'm very excited to be seeing where we're at and where we're going with research, with policy change,
right.
and hopefully a better direction for folks.
Right. No, this is the next frontier. And I think it's high time we did it. I mean, obviously, like cannabis, psychedelics have been around for ages. The mushroom obviously has been growing since the dawn of time. And a lot of people don't realize that psychedelics, especially mushrooms, have quite a history, throughout the ages. I mean, it's been documented, the use of psychedelics and the significance of it in our culture, not maybe our culture, but in other cultures, where it was actually used as a celebratory or a more spiritual type of use. I mean, I'm sure you know about the red and white mushroom cap being the Amanita muscaria and the correlation that it has with Christmas, right? Have you ever seen the little elves and the mushrooms?
The mushroom, right?
Right.
Yeah, so there's some beautiful stories about that, of course. Yeah. And
right.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, a lot of the medicines that we're seeing being sort of taken into the lab or the clinical study right now do have quite a bit of history as sacred, as spiritual sacraments for indigenous cultures, for native cultures within the U.S. and also, in South America, Central America. So it's in a lot of ways nothing new as far as how folks have used it. But we're certainly giving it a bit of a Western American US-based medical spin to the approach in order to sort of pass scientific muster in the ways that things need to in our country here.
Right. We just changed it from a spiritual enlightening thing to therapeutic, which, you know, realistically, right, spirituality, that they're all therapeutic. Absolutely. So, yeah, right. Like ayahuasca has been used in ceremonies for years. You know, the peyote was always used. It's been used by native cultures. And how did we get to this place? Because a lot of people may not know, but psychedelics was actually one of the last things to be considered a controlled substances or a drug, right? Cannabis, cocaine, heroin, they all went down way before that. But psychedelics seem to stay under the radar until the 60s, right? And then we had a guy like Timothy Leary and Richard Albert making a lot of noise there with their studies. Now, they were looking at it therapeutically. Right. But I think that was really when psychedelics became an issue, I guess, with the government, with people, right? How did that come about?
Yeah, well, you have to really consider the cultural context and the social context of the time. It wasn't just, Timothy Leary and Alpert.
No, there were others doing it too.
You know, doing their research. There was a lot going on socially with the war and the counterculture movement. And young people in particular being activists, advocating for change and making a lot of noise, as you mentioned, caused certain people to look into this a little further, right? And, just as any other previous policy change or criminalization has been related to social, racial factors, so too was psilocybin, in that there were beliefs that certain powers that be weren't on board with, and certainly a lot of propaganda spinning, a lot of different messages and messaging around particularly LSD, and there's a lot of sort of scare tactics and stories being told about
the kids jumping out the windows. I was there. I remember.
Right. And so that it's no different than any other previous, right? If looking at cocaine, if we're looking at heroin,
always a scare. Yep.
Always a similar pattern. So there's not really a whole lot new there. Just maybe a different social context, a different war, a different thing going on. That caused a little bit of a stir, which of course then not only did it mean that these were now going to be controlled substances, but effectively completely shutting down any research into effective uses of these substances. So that's where we sort of started to see the decrease of research into the mental health benefits, the medical benefits of things like LSD, psilocybin, and others.
I give it a lot of credit for lasting as long as it did, and I guess somewhere around, I don't know, I would say maybe 10 years ago, maybe a little bit before, psychedelics started making a bit of a comeback and becoming more mainstream. Mm-hmm. You know, you've even had guys like Joe Rogan come out and say how DMT and how psychedelics are good. And
Weissman has that movie show too, Pharmacopoeia.
So it seems to have resurfaced in the mainstream, and the good thing about that is it's also made people aware of the therapeutic uses of it and caused a little bit of movement within the lawmakers and within the medical community, because let's be real, these people were trained. A lot of these doctors now were all trained that this stuff was bad, just like cannabis, you know, and had no medical use. So now we're seeing some doctors coming around and saying, hey, Yale New Haven authorized the study on psilocybin. So what do you think changed the tide with the people's perception of psychedelics and with, the powers that be perception of psychedelics?
Yeah, I mean, I think a few different things. I think a desperation right. in a lot of ways, because the sort of golden standard of medicine for mental health are things like SSRIs, antidepressants mm-hmm. that frankly aren't really that effective. They certainly can be very beneficial for a lot of people, but for folks that have really challenging mental health conditions that are hard to treat, there's not a whole lot out there right. that can give them the kind of relief that something like MDMA or psilocybin might. And I think also, with the advance of technology, medical technology, we're able to better understand how the body works, how the brain works in relation to the body, and how that all right. functions with our mental health, and being able to sort of understand how some of these substances work in the brain, how the brain is working, and seeing, kind of better understanding what's happening in there, right. and seeing that potential. Right. And yeah, just the advances of that. I think there's also been more of a cultural shift right. in how we view drugs in general. Certainly, I think more and more people are understanding that the war on drugs has failed us. It's certainly not causing there to be any less drugs available.
There
are people dying from overdose and things like this. So I think, again, maybe in a sense of desperation of needing to address those issues and recognizing that, one, the reason that drugs are illegal doesn't have anything to do with how they actually impact the body and isn't really based in science. And so I really, kind of looking at that and exploring how something like cannabis, for example, would be scheduled in the way it was lower risk level than something else. So really, I think people started to dig in a little further and have a better understanding that the science is not in line with sort of the criminal status of some of these drugs. So being able to kind of tease those things apart, I think has helped society become more accepting of looking into the possibilities of some of these substances. And certainly, I think the cannabis movement paved a way for that as well.
Right. And I think a lot of it has to do with parents who are sick and tired of seeing their children acting like zombies. Mm-hmm. And there's got to be a better way. The side effects that come from the pharmaceutical drugs that they're using for these things can be devastating to a child, and you're giving this to young children, not only adults, and the physical ramifications from some of these antidepressants, SSRIs, the side effects. And I think a lot of people with veganism movement are ready to go back to a more natural type of medicine. And, sometimes it takes 100 years of one way to show that it doesn't work mm-hmm. for maybe people to go back and look at the old way. Sure. Because let's be real, all these things were legal 100 years ago. They were on the pharmacopoeia. Okay. So, if it worked as medicine before, and I don't remember, one could argue that the way they regulated it and do it now has exacerbated the addiction problem, sure. made it much, putting it in the hands of doctors has actually exacerbated the problem, and we were probably better off leaving it in the hands of the people. But anyway.
Yeah. I want to be careful too, not to sort of promote any sort of like exceptionalist thinking either. I mean, I think we have to recognize right. that for some people, medicines like SSRIs are life-saving medicine.
Right, right. Oh, absolutely.
And it's important to recognize that. Maybe not for everyone. So this is an opportunity for us to have more tools in our toolbox to be able to more individualize care, which we should be doing anyway.
Right.
So having
right.
other options available to us is really the promising thing here.
Right. Exactly. Expanding the treatment, from everything. I mean, what can psychedelics be therapeutic for? Like, how could it help somebody who may want to use psychedelics for something for their
health? Yeah. So, I mean, there's the opportunities are pretty exciting. Certainly what we're seeing in the clinical research right now, like I said, that the sort of main players are MDMA, and it's important to recognize that it's the full treatment in itself, not just the medicine that's being researched. So it's MDMA assisted therapy for post-traumatic stress disorder. So that's a big one right now. And of course, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies is sort of leading the charge on that.
Right.
The second sort of big player right now is psilocybin, which of course is mushrooms, psychedelic mushrooms. And, you know, they use a particular extraction of psilocybin called psilocin in these studies. And primarily, you know, started out as sort of end of life care, anxiety around sort of cancer treatment and sort of addressing sort of, you know, coming to, you know, facing the end of life due to chronic medical condition. And then, of course, treatment-resistant depression is another big
one. That's the big one, right.
And that, I think, is one that's really catching a lot of attention, particularly these days, because I think there's a lot. People are struggling, right? The past few years have been particularly challenging.
Exactly.
There are shows about it on Vice. You guys are like, you keep like ringing these bells in my head about these shows that I see on Viceland about like different types of like therapies with like cancer patients who take psilocybin to like conquer fear of death.
Exactly.
Or even like there's a show about like what you're saying, that other type of therapy you're saying, where like they're in group therapy trying to overcome trauma and PTSD. And it's crazy to see it. Like, that's how my mom really learned that it was even okay. She was like, wow, this television show is saying that these therapies are happening.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, mom. Like, because my mom was a cancer nurse for 35 years, pediatric oncology. So when she saw that happening for cancer patients, she like started crying. She was like, oh my God. And then she told a couple of her friends, and I'm like, wow. So like the community actually learned from this television show about therapeutic use of psilocybin. So I think that's really you guys are ringing my bells. I'm like, oh my God.
That's what we're supposed to do.
Yeah
you're doing your job.
Yeah. And so that's just the beginning, right? We're seeing more and more clinical trials coming out, looking at things like substance use disorders, like obsessive compulsive disorders, like regular depression, like anxiety, all sorts of things, creativity even. So there's lots and lots, you know, we're really sort of rolling now with hundreds and hundreds of clinical trials and all sorts of different approaches to using these medicines for a variety of different things. So there's, like I said, there's a lot of opportunity, and I'm always intrigued by the research and seeing what's coming down the pike.
Right. Now, Vilmarie, would you like to hang out with us for a little while? Our next guest is on, who is Josh Elliott, who is a Connecticut State representative who has was leading the charge for cannabis, and he's laying the groundwork for psilocybin in Connecticut. And the next thing I did want to talk about was legislatively and what are the changes in the laws. And so I think it might be good to bring Josh in on that too. And I just want to give him a quick intro. Josh Elliott is the representative for the 88th District House in the Connecticut General Assembly. He has advocated for implementing progressive policies that will help improve Connecticut's economy and allow it to remain competitive with surrounding states. Josh grew up in Connecticut, went to high school in Hamden. He graduated with a BA in sociology from Ithaca, and he got and he also went to the Quinnipiac School of Law, and he got his JD there. He also is a co-owner of the Common Bond Market in Shelton, a very cool place, and Time and Season in Hamden. There are two family-run natural stores. So he is definitely involved in the community, and he recognizes the importance of investing in working families and business. Josh has spearheaded many efforts. He's dedicated to improving the treatment of Connecticut's incarcerated population. He's an advocate of banning the use of solitary confinement. And he definitely championed a bill that would provide telecommunication services to certain incarcerated people at no cost. And he also spearheaded the efforts to legalize the use of recreational marijuana, sought to equalize property tax rates, and consistently supported establishing a more equitable tax structure. So, Josh, always a pleasure to see you. How are you? I know that was a long-winded intro, but I always want to give you the proper intro. Maybe you got to send me a short one next time.
I was going to say, it feels like it gets longer and longer, Joe.
Well, you get more and more accolades as you do more and more things over the years. Right. But Josh, I wanted to have you on today because today is a special episode on psychedelics and the laws and the things that are changing about it. And, you know, there are other states that have decriminalized it. There are other states that have allowed research. And just like legalized cannabis, right, you would think that Connecticut would be one of the last states to even consider something like research into psilocybin or even the decriminalization of it. But a lot of people don't know, last year during the session, you introduced a bill that would essentially start a process to study the possibilities of use for psilocybin for therapy in Connecticut and the possible to get the ball rolling. And it kind of went under the radar because cannabis legalization took the spotlight last year, but the bill did pass. Am I correct?
Sorry, I turned that off. It did pass. So we introduced the bill through public health. I had introduced the bill before. It hadn't gone anywhere. And this was the, it went from 0 to 60. It wasn't like I had talked to a number of my colleagues to ensure that we would have a clean and easy passage. It was one of those things where the chair of the committee liked the bill, both chairs, the House chair and the Senate chair, liked the bill. I had a number of chairs of other various committees that wanted to sign on. We took a explicitly medical tack when coming at this issue last year, and we went with what is usually the easiest route, which is getting a task force. So we got that task force going. We got a number of folk from agencies like the Department of Public Health and the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, and some of the governor's people and some legislators on both sides of the aisle. And they've been convening for the past 3 or 4 months and will be ready to put out a report to the legislature soon on what they think we should do. So it all came together significantly faster than I ever would have expected, given the topic.
And was acted on significantly faster than usual, I would think. So this may be something they actually has some momentum and that they actually may want to do.
Right. So the task force, to be clear, cannot do anything itself.
No,
what they
can
do is they can give us recommendations. And then it's going to come down to the legislators again about whether or not we want to follow the recommendations.
Right.
Now, one thing I can tell you is that we are seeing phase one trials and phase two trials at a number of universities. We have federal grants for NYU and Johns Hopkins, and I think even more importantly, here at Yale. And
yes,
we also have phase three trials for MDMA. And I think that there's a lot of excitement around this this research, given especially that we are living through this pandemic where people's mental health problems are bubbling up to the surface in a way they may not have before. And so people that you may expect to be more conservative on the issue of drug use generally are, I think, becoming swayed by the fact that there is very serious research that's happening. On the other side of the coin, researchers right now are, it seems like, not quite ready to be fully throated yet. I think they still want to be doing more research. I do think we are nearing the tail end about when they will look to become more political, because the fact is that no matter what the research says, pro or con, the question about decriminalization, the question about medical use, still comes down to a political question. So regardless of what the task force puts out, we can go either way. So I am still moving forward on the question of decriminalization, and I'm still trying to move forward on the question of medical use, or at the very least allowing people to use psilocybin themselves medically, even if it's not necessarily prescribed by a doctor, because I do know from anecdotal experience, from friends, from people that I've met who have used, that there is an incredible benefit even without the cognizance or supervisance of a medical professional.
Right. And we have on the line with us Ville Marie, and she's from SSDP, but she is also a psychedelic researcher and has been doing it for quite a long time. She runs a clinic for that. And so I wanted to connect you guys because SSDP is doing quite a lot of activism in this area. And Ville Marie is the head of education there. And so maybe SSDP can be one of your allies as far as when you start taking this to the next route. And Ville Marie, did you have any questions for Josh? Or maybe you have worked on other states, correct, through SSDP?
Yeah, for a few different things. So we've got, SSDP obviously does all sorts of drug policy.
Yeah, they want all drugs legalized.
And certainly we are involved in efforts in different states specific to psychedelics, whether it's, basic decrim or sort of looking into this medical use like Oregon has done, like you all are looking into, like Michigan is looking into, California is looking into it. And so our members are like ready. They are really excited about the policy opportunities and getting involved in all of this. So as a psychologist, and I'm obviously interested in not only the regulation of the substance itself, but also what it will look like, what the services will look like, right? So I'm curious to hear from you, Josh, and I know you're still sort of in the midst of getting these sort of recommendations from your group, but what sorts of like training or sort of regulation have you all been considering in Connecticut for the actual sort of service provision of this piece of it?
So the task force is being led by, his name is Jim, and he was handed over to the task force by Demas, and he's had decades worth of experience with the agency, and he's exclusively working on this topic. Because the task force, it seems like they aren't quite ready to say, all right, legislature, we need to come up with a full framework. It seems like they're punting. So the specifics aren't quite there yet in terms of what that should be. That said, a number of the conversations I'm having with colleagues, there is this general understanding that it is on the horizon. So we really shouldn't be punting, that we really should be getting ready to be answering the questions that you're posing. I don't know if they're going to be answered this year. That said, I don't think that Demas is going to be sitting on their hands. So even while the task force might not be coming with specific recommendations about what a medical program looks like, I do get the sense that Demas will start working on this, even though the task force isn't saying to the legislature that we should be putting something in place.
Right. Yeah, that was the next question I was going to ask. What are the next steps legislatively? Is it going to follow the same sort of path that cannabis followed, where it does start with a task force giving their recommendations, and then you introduce a next level bill and will it take 7 years like cannabis? No.
You're going in session in what, two, three weeks?
Is there any plans to take it to the next level this session? I guess that was my...
I did talk to the chair of the Public Health Committee, and I did get a commitment from him to run a decriminalization bill. Now, just because we're going to run it doesn't mean much, because you'll see some of these headlines from Texas or California, things that are very far left or very far right. Just because one person introduces a bill and says they want to see something done, there's 187 legislators. So to be very clear, the fact that I have a commitment to run this bill through the Public Health Committee is a good step, but there's a lot of steps to make something become law. So there's the two sides. There's the broad decrim question, and then there's the medical question. The medical question is going to be on hold because it's going to be very hard. And I don't want to kill this idea, but before it gets a chance, but I will say it is very hard to get legislators on board if a task force comes and says, no, we shouldn't do this yet. I'm certainly going to be making the point with colleagues that are firmly on board this idea. And for me, the whole issue is just keep it alive and keep on talking about it until until more researchers are out there and more comfortable to be really proactive. But we're going to need people in the research field to be willing to say that the results are unanimous and they are clear. And a number of us, again, politically, we know that that's what it's going to end up being, but we still need the backup from more people. So it's just going to be getting people on board, getting people comfortable with the idea, seeing how much pushback the Republicans are going to be giving, seeing if we can get some buy-in from some Republicans, which I think we can do. I will say that this year is a short session, so it is harder to get bills that don't already have a lot of support over the finish line.
Right.
We're starting in February, ending in May, whereas next year we'll be starting in January. We're ending in April this year, May this year, June next year. Right.
I think Lou has a question.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, how's it going, guys? So my question is, we have the agricultural side as well. If we look, I'm not talking medical, but I'm looking more the decrim side of it. This, I guess, picking your brain. Now, what would be the idea that maybe as we move into this space, we give a chance for some agricultural growth instead of just seeing it in more of closed lab style space, but more grown like some of the other non-restricted
like home grow too, even home.
You know?
Yeah, I know. And like I said, I have that commitment already to start working on it, but as to whether or not it actually becomes successful this year, I'm going to say almost certainly not. But that said, if we have the conversation, it'll be the first time we're talking about it, and that's a big deal.
Let's talk about it.
Decrim is a good first step, Josh. That's how it started with cannabis, right? Decrim.
And it seems to be a trend, that I'm seeing with states at least that are putting out these medical use bills. There seems to always also be, whether it's built into the bill itself or sort of as an add-on or a separate bill altogether, where decrim also gets pushed through. We saw that in Oregon. They're working on that, something like that in California. Other states may also be doing putting similar things together. So that seems to maybe be like the strategy here, that including decrim, whether it's a separate bill or within the medical services types of bills, seems to be a good way of approaching this.
Yeah, it seems to be following the same path as cannabis, and that's kind of good because there's already a sort of a roadmap, And again, decrim was pretty much the first step in taking it into getting it for medical use, which did take time between the two. But, maybe since they learned from cannabis, maybe they'll do it a little quicker than they did with cannabis. Because, Josh, you know how long that process took from start to finish.
Very long. And started well before I got to the legislature. Juan Candelario told me the times when he was the lone person in the room talking about cannabis. And then, of course, over a decade later, he was the chief architect from the House, which is really neat, that full circle.
Yeah,
but it took a while.
Yeah, so sir, it was at least 7 years up there. So, but hey, in the end, I don't want to say we prevailed, but the bill went through and we have legalization in Connecticut. So we hopefully can do this with the psychedelics and the next phase, We're getting a little close to the end. Josh, I wanted to ask you first, how can people get in touch with you? What can they do to show their support for this bill, for the decriminalization and medical use of psychedelics? Is there an email they can send? Is there a certain, you know, how can they show their support and get on the ball, on the train?
Always the best thing to do is to reach out to your own representative and your own senator. Letting me know that you support the bill is great, but I'm already there.
Yeah. So if you're in Hamden, you get in touch with Josh.
Right. Sure. But I would say the issue right now is an issue of awareness and normalization, and making sure that people are talking about this and that electeds don't feel that there's going to be some sort of internal pushback, or I should say external pushback, from their from the people that actually elect them. So the good first step is just reaching out, just letting them know that you want to see this done. Because this was so under the radar, we actually passed this task force in what is called an omnibus bill. It's a huge bill that had a bunch of things in it, and this was fairly innocuous and wasn't going to hold anything up. So a lot of people voted on this bill and didn't even realize it. So a lot of people are actually part
good
of the
job,
process.
Josh.
I don't even know. That's good just, job. I mean, the nice thing for a task. I know. Well, I mean, the thing about a task force specifically is that since it doesn't change anything legislatively, people do feel a lot more comfortable making that step. Of course, decrim is a systemic change. And so talk about it, reach out to your elected people. And let them know is the best thing to do.
All right, great. And your session starts
beginning of February.
So in about 3 weeks. You're getting ready to go. For Josh,
ready to go.
Yeah, great, man, great. And I want to thank you again for all the work you do. You've done a lot of great things in the legislature since your time in there. And, you know, we always appreciate you coming on the show, talking to us, giving us the scoop on what's going on, and then the hard work you do for your constituents, you know, and I hope that people appreciate that. Hamden has been very progressive when it comes to cannabis. So thank you very, very much, Josh. Always a pleasure. Ville Marie, how can we get in touch with you and with your work in SSDP, your clinic? How do people get in touch with you?
Yeah, well, ssdp.org is where you can find us. You can always email me, my first name at ssdp.org. And then the clinic, it's a nonprofit called Sana Healing Collective. You can find us at sanahealingcollective.org.
Oh, very, very good. Okay. Do you have any last minute thoughts before we sign off the air? Either one of you?
Yeah, just good luck, Josh, on this session. Hopefully everything goes well. Let us know if SSDP can be of support in your work.
Yeah, sounds good. I appreciate it. It's great.
I love your scores.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Hell
yeah. He goes to Common Bond
all the time. I've actually seen you there. So thank you for all of your great products there.
Yeah, great. My pleasure. That's awesome. And for us, you can get in touch with us at Greenhaven Media on Instagram, Facebook. You can follow us on YouTube. We now have Cannabis Corner up on YouTube, on our Greenhaven Media YouTube page. A lot of good stuff going on. We got a lot of new podcasts that we're starting to work with. To Be Blunt with PZ on Wednesdays. We got the Policy Watch with Grant Ellis on Tuesdays. And I mean, PZ's Thursdays. Grant is Tuesdays. And we have now still Token with the Dead on Wednesday nights. So we're growing here with Greenhaven Media. We want to thank you all for your support. Please follow us. Check out our events calendar. Check out everything that's going on with Greenhaven Media. We love you guys, and we will see you next week. Thanks again to our guests. Hit that music, Harry. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Isaiah, by the way.
Of course, Joe. I'm here for you whenever you need me.
And tell Lou, thank you.
Of course, Lou sends his love.
All right, we'll talk later.
I was gonna clean my room until I got high. I was gonna get up and find the broom, but then I got high. My room is still messed up.
And I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La da 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 da. I was gonna go to class before I got high.
Come on, y'all.
Check it out. I could have cheated and I could have passed, but I got high. La da. I'm taking it next semester, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high.
Go to the next one. Go to the next one. Go to the next one.
I was gonna go to court before I got high. Ooh, I was gonna pay my child support, but then I got high.
No, you wasn't.
They took my whole paycheck, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La da 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 da. I wasn't gonna run from the cops, but I was high.
I'm serious, man.
I was gonna pull right over and stop, but I was high. La da da. Now I'm a paraplegic, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, 'cause I got high.